The Honorable Richard A. Posner is a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals, 7th District. He's also a prolific author. His most recent book is called The Little Book of Plagiarism. Posner talked to Steve Paulson about, what else? Plagiarism.
Yes, it's an interesting example of behavior that's regarded as wrongful, but it hasn't been brought under a kind of legal regime. So the sanctions are informal, though they can be quite serious, but also partly because it isn't under a legal regime, it's not clearly defined. And so, you know, copyright infringement, huge body of law and so on, there are areas of uncertainty, but there's a great deal of definition. But with plagiarism, there isn't any kind of official body, like a court, to tell you what is plagiarism or not. And that causes a lot of problems because some people commit what they don't regard as plagiarism, but other people regard as plagiarism, and they get into trouble.
Well, it strikes me that the whole notion of plagiarism has changed a lot over the years. I mean, centuries ago, writers routinely borrowed or perhaps stole episodes from other books. I mean, Shakespeare is a famous example of someone who pilfered whole scenes. Apparently, he took the barge scene in Antony and Cleopatra directly from Plutarch's Life of Mark Antony.
Right. Yes, it's a very culturally relative term. And even today, in foreign cultures often, copying verbatim from someone else is regarded as a token of respect, and to try to do something original is regarded as presumptuous. And you're quite right, over the centuries it has changed considerably, because in the olden days there's more of a sense that creativity meant you were improving something, you weren't creating things out of the void. But today we put much more emphasis on originality. One difference is, you know, something like Plutarch's Lives, it wasn't really available. It had been translated into English, but it wasn't really available to many people in England in the 16th century because a lot of illiteracy and books were very expensive and so on. So for Shakespeare to take this and revise it and then present it in plays, which, you know, a lot of people who didn't read books went to plays, he was, you know, in a funny way, he was helping to spread the word about Plutarch.
But let me ask you the other question. I mean, is it fair to call Shakespeare a plagiarist?
No, I don't think so. It's a culturally relative term. Actually, he was accused of plagiarism by a rival playwright, a fellow named Green. But generally, that was considered sour grapes. And, you know, the charge didn't stick. Because, as you said, a lot of unacknowledged copying was regarded as fair play. So, you know, it's very anachronistic to go back and say, well, Shakespeare was a plagiarist, because if he were doing this today, he would be considered a plagiarist. In his culture, he was not. Although, mm-hmm. you know, he's sort of on the borderline.
But I'm wondering if this is partly a matter of, I mean, part of the interest in this story is how cultural values have changed, because there certainly is a cult of originality now. I mean, that's what people look for in a writer, for instance. And maybe it's because we live in this time where so much is mass-produced and prepackaged that we want to hear that authentic voice. And then when we hear that it's not, even though it's passed on as authentic, that's what really rubs people the wrong way.
Yes, and I think part of it is that there are financial stakes. For example, the case I discussed involving the Harvard student who had plagiarized from an established writer of chick lit novels.
This was Kavya Viswanathan.
Right. So, you know, this is a big money business. And Viswanathan had gotten a $500,000 advance for two novels. And that meant that the publisher saw her as someone who could really, you know, take a big bite out of this market. So she plagiarizes this established author, and that means the established author is going to worry that Viswanathan is going to use the established author's own words to steal sales from her. So when you have money involved, people get very tense about this, but it's more than money, because some of these plagiarisms involve a popular writer or a prominent academic stealing from an obscure person, and that, you know, hurts the obscure person, because, I mean, one thing if the prominent person said, look, I'm repeating some things that were said by someone else years ago, and they're really intelligent. That person didn't get a lot of credit, so I'm going to, you know, restate his ideas, but you give him full credit and you give the obscure person a boost. But if you plagiarize, you don't acknowledge your copy, then you're sort of digging that person further into his obscurity, because you, the prominent person, are getting the credit for the ideas that you took from him.
Let me ask you about the case of Ian McEwan, which has gotten a lot of notoriety in recent months. And McEwan, of course, is one of the most celebrated novelists in the world. His novel Atonement was widely hailed as a masterpiece, and then it's turned out recently that a few of the scenes, particularly those set in a World War II hospital, were basically, to some degree, borrowed from a memoir that had been written years ago by an obscure writer. I mean, a woman who had written mostly romance novels, although this was from
her memoir.
Yeah, and I mean, people have lined up some of the passages, and sure enough, a few of McEwan's sentences are almost verbatim copies of what this other woman had written. And there's been a huge outcry about whether McEwan really did anything wrong.
Well, I think actually the real problem there has to do with the acknowledgments. I haven't read his book, but I did read the last page. He has a set of acknowledgments.
And he does credit her there.
And but this, I think, is the real problem, because he says in a sort of very general way, you know, I don't remember exactly how I put it, but I acknowledge having read, or, you know, having benefited from reading. And then he lists several books, of which hers is one. And when you read the acknowledgement and the list of books, the impression created is that, you know, he read some stuff and got some background information. And what he should have done, and it wouldn't have detracted from his book at all, he should have, assuming he didn't, you know, copy any words or anything from the other authors in a little list of acknowledgement, he should have said, you know, I want to give a special acknowledgement to the woman.
Her name is Lucilla Andrews.
Right, to Andrews, because I have incorporated some passages from her book, and I, you know, paraphrased them and acknowledged, you know, how much I admired those passages, because that's why I paraphrased. So if he bent over backwards to thank her, there wouldn't be any problem. People wouldn't say, oh, McEwan, he's not original, because mm-hmm. he found these passages which he thought were so good he couldn't improve on them, except, you know, maybe some minor editing. No, that's not how people think. So.
And it's worth pointing out that a lot of big-name writers came to McEwan's defense. I mean, everyone from Margaret Atwood to Thomas Pynchon, they all said, you know, stop accusing McEwan of being a plagiarist. But I think what has rubbed some people the wrong way about this whole story is, here McEwan is a world-famous writer, and he, to some degree, I mean, some people say that he essentially stole the life story, the life experience of this much less well-known writer. That's the thing that I think really rubs people the wrong way.
Yes, I don't. As I say, I haven't read his book. I haven't read her work, so I don't know the extent of it. I know I have read articles which did say that, yes, there was more than those passages. It was the idea that his central character is based on her memoir. But
and her memoir being a nurse in World War
II,
and this whole chunk of his novel
is about
that. So he basically went to her memoir to try to recreate the atmosphere.
But I wouldn't put any weight at all in the fact that other prominent writers spring to his defense, because that's a kind of clubby thing, right? Everybody, because they don't want to be accused of this.
Now, one of the defenses that you sometimes hear from all kinds of people is that, well, you don't necessarily remember all the research that you did, and so maybe what you think is original is actually remembering something that you heard somewhere or that you read, and you're passing it off as original, but it's an honest mistake.
Well, I think that's true for ideas often, that you don't remember the origin of an idea if it's not a very important idea. And I think you could remember a phrase that you thought was, you remembered the phrase, but you didn't remember that you'd actually heard it from someone else. But what I find very hard to believe is that you could have memorized a significant passage, and although you'd memorized it, you'd forgotten that you'd memorized it. That seems to me very odd. Suppose you had a photographic memory. I don't think anybody actually has, but some people have really excellent memories, so they can remember, you know, long passages. But since they have that excellent memory, I would think they'd remember the long passage. And also, as I say, there's this matter of style that people who are at least professional writers, they have their own style. And if they suddenly found that in their something they were writing, a different style appeared, they would say, wait, this isn't me.
Richard A. Posner is a judge and the author of The Little Book of Plagiarism. He spoke from his chambers with Steve Paulson.